This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Today we're going to talk about enlightenment in two very different senses of the word. Our more familiar use of the word with the small e enlightenment in our Buddhist tradition and the capital E, enlightenment, the 18th century that we'll discuss in our study group with Isaiah Berlin. And in both contexts, this word enlightenment seems to imply some form of clarity, of light being shown into the darkness, of being able to see things clearly for the first time. And yet the two words, in the two contexts, implied very different, even opposing notions of what that clarity consisted in, how we see, and what it is that had been obscuring our vision. The study group, I'll talk more about the ideas of the Enlightenment, but it's sufficient to say that it put great faith in the power of reason, of science, of thinking, and that the Buddhist version of enlightenment seems to take diametrically the opposing view. It doesn't see reason as the solution, it tends to see it as the problem. And that the Buddhist enlightenment is a clearing away of conceptual confusion. That it's somehow our thoughts themselves that entangle us. And that it is only some way when we're able to see through them that we have actual clarity. Now, when Berlin discusses this group of Enlightenment thinkers under the title Freedom and Its Betrayal, he's going to talk about how a particular ideal, an ideal reason, and even liberty itself, when taken to an extreme, turned into its opposite. And I think that what makes it relevant to us in our practice is that our lineage grew out of a very parallel phenomenon when Joko Beck declared that enlightenment or our faith in it had somehow ceased to be the solution and in itself had become part of the problem. the way she learned to practice and the way many of us in my generation learned to practice put a great deal of emphasis on being able to achieve an enlightenment experience. Kind of books that came out early on, like the Three Pillars of Zen, emphasized the transformative nature of these experiences, and they were really the be-all and end-all of practice. That enlightenment would provide a kind of missing clarity and in itself an end to suffering. And that this program of sitting practice and concentration practice and koan practice was the one way to have this kind of transformative experience, and that that was really the core of what we were up to here. Now, Joko's experience and her insight in teaching were based on her realization that while these enlightenment experiences were quite real and quite powerful and quite transformative, as advertised, they weren't completely as advertised. That in fact, a great deal of emotional suffering and ethical misbehavior and addictive behavior did not necessarily seem to be all that transformed by enlightenment experiences. We had been taught that the power of these experiences in a kind of top-down way, if you had one of those, it was sort of a kind of universal solvent. It would dissolve anything it encountered. It was the ultimate trickle-down theory, right? If you poured enough of this enlightenment solvent into the top of your head, it would just sort of seep through your body and your mind, and it would dissolve all clinging, all attachment, right? And while this seemed to be true in part, it did not reach into the nooks and crannies of people's emotional life as we had imagined. And so there arose originally a notion of emotional bypass, which we read about in a slightly more technical form in Bromberg, the theory of dissociation, that powerful experiences of connection, of oneness, of deep okayness could be very compartmentalized, could be very much confined as private experiences on the cushion or within certain context, but they didn't travel very well. Couldn't bring it home the way we thought we'd be able to. So, Joko, like Isaiah Berlin, in a certain way devoted herself to trying to articulate how something that looked like the solution became part of the problem. How something that was an undeniable good became dangerous when it was considered the only good or a totally sufficient good. And in both cases, a big part of what got left out was emotion. Feeling. The Enlightenment put its faith in reason. It did not give a very adequate account of emotion. Our Buddhist notions of enlightenment put its faith in realization. It also turned out not to give a very good account of emotion. So in both cases, what we're trying to look at are our curative fantasies, our pictures of what is wrong and what is going to be a solution. And it's not that we're entirely mistaken about the nature of the solution. The danger is when these solutions are taken to extremes or are thought to be totally sufficient within themselves so that we don't have to do anything else. Right, enlightenment is a wonderful thing, but maybe it's not a complete substitute for therapy. Maybe it's not a complete substitute for politics. Right, maybe it's not a substitute for all sorts of ways of examining and changing the way we are in the world. So I'd like us to keep Joko's model in mind and her reaction to small e enlightenment when we read Berlin and talk about his attitudes to the capital E enlightenment. It's not at all that either was against enlightenment. They both saw it as a absolutely positive and necessary thing. But in each case, something about it goes awry in ways that we don't expect. And I think that part of the reason for studying some of the philosophers that Berlin examines is that each in their turn had a kind of philosophical curative fantasy that bears a remarkable resemblance to the kinds of things that we can fall into in our daily life or in our practice, and that there are important analogies about what these philosophers thought of as solutions and how those solutions went awry. So I hope that what we'll be talking about turns out to feel not esoteric or academic, but actually very related to how we think of our practice.